Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi and welcome. This is Rabbi Michael Katz here with you live. It is Judaism 101.9 and it's great to be in your company this Wednesday afternoon here in a rainy and wet Highveld. But beautiful rain, wonderful brachas that are coming min hashamayim. And so we're not going to say no to the beautiful rain that we have been having. And of course the water cuts, hopefully. Well, like quite funny that you have water cuts during so much rain. But anyway, just putting it out there, and here we go. Judaism 101.9, and here are some of the interesting things that are going on this week in history. If we take a look at the day today, the 21st day of Shvat, it commemorates something that I found particularly fascinating. Because, you know, we always think about how history repeats itself. One of the things that has always been kind of as a backdrop to Judaism, this isn't Judaism 101.9, but a backdrop to Judaism throughout the ages, has been a big anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism has kind of always reared its ugly head, and it's been there in the background of all of our history, if we think about it, from time immemorial right up until today. And of course, we don't have to remind anybody about what's going on in the world right now with anti-Semitism cropping up for no apparent reason, other than the fact that Jews are there, and perhaps we remind people of the conscience that they should have and a connection with God that they don't want, that they don't have, and therefore it is a way of kind of isolating or defending themselves from themselves that they take it out on the Jews. I'm not sure if that makes sense at all, but it is a theory about why there is anti-Semitism. But today is a date that is marked poignantly for something to do with anti-Semitism in history. And for this, we've got to go back to the year 1657. And perhaps even further back than that, if we jump 367 years before that to the year 1290, we actually have the beginning of something that came to an end in 1657. What am I talking about? Well, in England, the great and wonderful England, there was a king called Edward I. And in the year 1290, Edward I saw to the expulsion of Jews from England. Imagine that. Jews were expelled from England. Not allowed to live in England. Not allowed to, never mind, own land there, never mind live in the upper echelons of the society there. But they were not allowed to live in England. Expelled all the Jews. You know, we've always spoken about and heard about the expulsion of the Jews from Spain. But here we had the expulsion of the Jews from England. And it took place in 1290, King Edward I, who saw that into law and banished Jews from the shores of England. Now, it was on the 4th of February in 1657 that a well-known name by the name of Oliver Cromwell, who was the Lord Protector of England, that he issued the first residence permit to a Jew after this all. So imagine, this expulsion of the Jews from England lasted 367 years until a Jew was granted residence and that he could come back and live in England. His name was Luis Carvajal, and he was the first Jew to be granted residence back in England after the expulsion of the Jews from England for 367 years. The actual readmittance of the Jews into England was actually partially due to the efforts of a great Talmudic scholar, a great scholar by the name of Rabbi Menashe ben Yisrael. It's a fascinating story, which we'll just deal with very briefly here because our topic is Judaism 101.9, not necessarily delving into the lives of great Jews who lived in the past. But here we have the amazing story of Menashe ben Yisrael. He was a rabbi, a teacher, who lived from about 1604 to 1657, so not a very old man. And strangely enough, he was a person who lived in Amsterdam. So living in Holland, where he learnt, where he taught, where he had succeeded his father and became a great leader of the Jewish people, he had befriended the Queen of Holland and many other people. In fact, we're told that he had correspondence with people of the caliber of Rembrandt and others who were famous at that time, and became quite an influential man in his own right. And he saw himself as a person who tried to protect Jews wherever they were. He became the spokesman, the kind of, I don't know, the Jewish board of the time, but for the world. And he saw himself as having this role, and he would reach out to try and help Jews who were in trouble anywhere. One of his missions, in fact, his last mission, was to travel to England to try and get to Oliver Cromwell. And he succeeded. He came to Oliver Cromwell with a campaign, a petition, a plan, and a defense of the Jewish people, trying to get rid of the notion that the Jews would destroy the economy of England, that they would do all sorts of other stuff, which people at the time were then afraid of. Jews coming into the market and with their entrepreneurial skills, they might bring down British markets and so on. He came, appealed to Oliver Cromwell, and persuaded him that it was time to let Jews come back and not persecute them anymore and expel them from England. He succeeded in it, and it was done, and it was became law, and Oliver Cromwell, as we said, on the 4th of February in 1657, which corresponded to the 21st of Shvat in 1657, he actually allowed the first Jew back in, at the behest of Menashe ben Yisrael, of the rabbi Menashe ben Yisrael. Unfortunately, the rabbi was on his way back from England to Amsterdam on a boat, and he died on the ship, was buried upon arrival in Amsterdam. A fascinating story of how Jews care for each other everywhere, and how there was, in those days, in inverted commas, shuttle diplomacy that was taken on by people of great caliber like Menashe ben Yisrael, and got the Jews back into England fair and square.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi, Rabbi Michael Katz here, back with you on Judaism 101.9. It's great to be in your company, and we're continuing our show for today with another little bit of interesting information from the 23rd of Shvat. So this will be coming up in a couple of days' time on Friday, 23rd of Shvat. It marks the occasion of a war in Israel. Now, this was a strange one as well. You have a war that took place in Israel between the tribes of Israel, who converged upon the tribe of Benjamin and went to war with them. And what was this war about? Well, this is the phenomenon. A woman had been abused in the tribe of Benjamin. It is a famous piece of Torah in the book of Judges, chapters 19:2, that we have related here about the Benjaminites, who were responsible for, or it was in their area, that a woman was abused, and seriously abused. It was known as the story of the Pilegesh Begiva, or the concubine at Giva. So this incident happens, and what happens then? The whole tribe is held accountable. All the men of the tribe are held accountable by the Jewish people for the fact that one woman was abused on their watch, in their area, in their place. And they went to war for it. You know, we've often heard about standing up for dignity, standing up for honor. Here, the whole people of Israel stood up for the dignity of one woman. One woman who happened to have been taken, abused by somebody or some people, and the whole tribe bore the responsibility, and they had to take the punishment for it. So a very, very interesting thing that this all happened on the 23rd of Shvat, which is coming up on Friday. An event that occurred during the judgeship of Othniel ben Knaz, who led the people of Israel in the years 2533 to 2573 from creation, or 1228 to 1188 before the Common Era. If we just go a little bit further forward and we think about what happens or what is going to happen in the next few days, in the next coming days, on Shabbos, which is the 24th of Shvat, we have the fulfillment or the statement of Zechariah's prophecy in 351 before the Common Era. And this is what it says in Zechariah: on the 24th day of the 11th month, which is the month of Shvat, in the second year of the reign of Darius, the word of God came to Zechariah, the son of Berechiah, the son of Iddo, the prophet, saying, I will return to Jerusalem in mercy. My house will be built within her, and the Lord shall yet console Zion and shall yet choose Jerusalem. And this was 2 years before the completion of the second Beis HaMikdash, or the second temple, on the 3rd of Adar, 349 before the Common Era. Now, isn't it amazing that it's on the 24th of Shvat that Zechariah made this great prophecy that Hashem would return the Jewish people to Jerusalem, and Kachava, that's what it was, that 2 years later, on the 3rd of Adar, it happened, and the second Beis HaMikdash stood there in all its glory. So we're looking at very, very powerful and important days, which not only speak of standing up for our rights, not only speak of things to do with anti-Semitism and the return of Jews to their rightful place in society, but they also speak of the Jewish people returning to Yerushalayim, returning to the Beis HaMikdash. And of course, we hope and pray that that happens very soon with the coming of Mashiach. Now, I dafka left out, in case you didn't notice, the 22nd of Shvat, which is tomorrow. Tonight and tomorrow is Chof Bet Shvat, the 22nd of Shvat. And just out of interest, it happens to be the yahrzeit of the Kotzke Rebbe. Kotzke Rebbe passed away in 1859. He was Rabbi Menachem Mendel of Kotzk, lived from 1787 to 1859, a renowned Hasidic leader and a forerunner of the Ger Hasidic dynasty and others, well known for his incisive wit and his incisive mind. The Kotzke Rebbe is often quoted in some very, very beautiful Hasidic tales, Hasidic stories, and great, great teachings. For us in the Chabad community of the modern era, of course, Chof Beis Shvat really means so much to us because it is the yahrzeit of the Rebbetzin. The Lubavitcher Rebbetzin, Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson's wife, whose name was Chaya Mushka, Rebbetzin Chaya Mushka Schneerson, was born in 1901, passed away in 1988 on the 22nd of Shvat. Now, there is so much that is written about the Rebbetzin and that is known about the Rebbetzin, and yet there is also so little, because the Rebbetzin really stood for and was the epitome of what a Jewish woman should be according to Torah. She was the epitome of modesty. She was the epitome of privacy. She was the epitome of what a Rebbetzin of that caliber needed to be, and was therefore in the most incredible, quiet, completely understated way. She was really the power behind the Rebbe himself, as he himself expounded upon. The Rebbe spoke about it after her passing. The kind of role that the Rebbetzin played in the life of the Rebbe and in the background of all the activities that her famous husband, who was literally at the helm of not only the worldwide Chabad Hasidic movement, but really of, we need to say, of Judaism per se, in the years that he was at the helm as the Rebbe. He was dealing with presidents and prime ministers. He was dealing with men and women in the street. He was dealing with every single problem that was brought to him as this incredibly powerful world leader. And the Rebbetzin was, as he put it, kind of the backbone, the personality, the person at home who made sure that the Rebbe was able to be as dedicated as he was, that she stood strong and fast and steadfast in supporting him in every single endeavor, but never really showing her face. You know, as someone who lived in that part of the world for a number of years, I think I was privileged to see the Rebbetzin once through the window of the car kind of passing by. She wasn't a public person. She was a private person. She wasn't a person who flaunted her position at all or utilized her position for her own personal gain in any way. She was this most incredible personality, strong with it. She was a librarian in a public library, very much down to earth, very much involved in things of the world, very much knowing of what was going on, and yet completely understated, completely in the background of her really, really out there and public husband who drove the world of Judaism as he was doing at that time. So if we think about the date of the Rebbetzin's Yahrzeit, which is tonight and tomorrow, the 22nd of Shvat, it has to be a day in which we really need to think about how we pay tribute to the women in the world and the women in our lives, whether it's mothers or grandmothers, sisters, wives, daughters, any woman. Because as has often been thought about in Judaism, and a Judaism 101 kind of a talk to you today, is that Judaism is male chauvinist, that Judaism is all about the men, that Judaism is not pro-women whatsoever. I was having a discussion last night with a young couple, and it's a wonderful privilege in the jobs that we have, that we can share in each other's, in people's simchas, that a couple have coming to talk about their upcoming wedding, and we're thinking about the parts of it, and the ring and the chuppah and all the things that go into making a beautiful wedding. We think about the ketubah, and yes, it's often been stated, but never has it been more important to state it, that the ketubah is the oldest known document of protection of women's rights. Think about it. What is a ketubah? What is a Jewish marriage document? So if you want to look at it as being that the man is the one who actually has to, and it gives the man this kind of control and power, it is actually there to protect the rights of women. That no, women are not just objects. No, women are not there to be abused in any way, God forbid. And women are not there to be the lackeys or the doormats of male chauvinist husbands. But or fathers, for that matter. Women are the princesses of Judaism. Women are the crown jewels of Judaism, of Jews everywhere. Women have the most incredible deep connection with God from a very, very powerful spiritual place. And perhaps it's for that very reason that men have to pray every day and women are exempt, that men have to do all sorts of time-bound things and women are exempt, not because the women can't or because they're inferior in any way, but on the contrary, because they have whatever men don't have naturally, women have naturally. They naturally have the connections that unless a man is going to be reminded that he has to pray, unless a man is going to be reminded that he has to think about God morning, afternoon, and evening, he ain't going to do that. Women have that naturally because of their lofty souls, because of their high, powerful, and important position within Judaism. And therefore, on the day particularly of Chof Pei Shvat, of the 22nd of Shvat, when we pay great tribute to the persona of Rebbetzin Chaya Mushke Schneerson, who passed away, as we said, in 1988, it is also an opportunity to pause and to think about not only the Rebbetzin per se, but the role of Jewish women, the role that women play in Judaism. The most important role, of course, being in the chinuch, the education of children, the upbringing of children, the raising of children with love, with care, not usurping that role to anybody else, but women taking that pride and that deep involvement that they have with their children, with their families, with their husbands, with their with everybody. The woman's intuition, the woman's souls, and the woman's ability to do all of that is unsurpassed and absolutely undeniable as being the real backbone of Jews and of Judaism everywhere. And so on this date of the 22nd of Shvat, as we pay tribute to the Rebbetzin and everything that she stood for, it is an opportunity to really pay tribute to all women everywhere, to our mothers, to our wives, to our daughters, to our sisters, to our children, and to think about the fantastic role that we know that women play in Judaism from the beginning to the end. Our Torah, our mitzvot, and so on would never ever be able to stand up were it not for the role of the Jewish woman.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi, and welcome back. As we mentioned before the break, the date of Chof Bei Shvat, which is tonight and tomorrow, is the Yahrzeit of the Rebbetzin Chaya Mushke Schneerson. Now, Chaya means life. Mushke is an aromatic spice, I guess, like musk. Chaya Mushke. On the significance of naming a child after the Rebbetzin, the Rebbe once said, "We can demonstrate that her children are alive by our taking a lesson from her conduct and conducting ourselves in her spirit in a manner of self-sacrifice." He said this is even more so when naming a child after her and training the child to follow her example. After all, this is the most basic aspect of her children are alive, so too is she alive. The Rebbe and the Rebbetzin, of course, had no children directly of their own, yet when a child visiting her at her home asked her, "Where are your children?" she answered that the Hasidim were all her children. Thousands of little girls around the world today have obviously grown up, and many more still being named Chaya Mushke after this great woman. Another few just little interesting tidbits of information. The Rebbe showed a tremendous amount of respect for his Rebbetzin, for his wife, and it gave us a glimpse of her true stature. She denied and declined any public recognition, and yet the Rebbe referred to her with such reverence when speaking about her, and particularly after her passing. So once the Lubavitch Women's Organization sent her a bouquet of flowers together with a list of individuals for whom blessings were requested. Setting aside the flowers for the Rebbetzin, the secretary passed the letter to the Rebbe, who, observing that it was addressed to his wife, asked his secretary to give it to his wife, to her, saying she too is capable of giving blessings. And the Rebbe once commented to a friend of the Rebbetzin, he said, "You have a good lawyer on your side." This was evident during a crucial time in Chabad Lubavitch history, in modern history, because there were legal proceedings trying to establish the true ownership of the books of the Lubavitch Library. Now remember that this was a debate between did the books belong to the Rebbetzin's family or did they belong to all the Hasidim? And when the defendant's attorney asked her to whom did the books belong, the Rebbetzin famously answered, "My father himself and everything he had, including the books, belong to the Hasidim." And her words, spoken with such sincerity and conviction, with all the bearing that it had on her own life, made such a profound impression upon the judge, and it helped sway the judgment in favor of the Agudat Hasidei Chabad, the group representing all the Hasidim, and therefore the library and the books although they could have been deemed to be personal family heirlooms and personal family books and library that they belonged to the Hasidim. And she was this strong voice, the strong catalyst in making sure that that happened, turning it away from any personal gain, any personal agenda. This was all about the Hasidim. This was all about her husband's followers, her husband's leaders, and the whole point of it belonging to the community. Community came first, personal agendas a very, very distant second. The Rebbetzin passed away, as we said. It was a Wednesday, the 22nd of Shvat in 1988, after a brief illness, and a burial took place a few hours afterwards at the Chabad Cemetery, the Moses Montefiore Cemetery in Queens in New York. And there the Rebbetzin is buried, really close to the Ohel. For any of those of you who have had the privilege of visiting the Ohel, the burial place of the Rebbe and his father-in-law, she is buried right alongside, really close, sort of, if you wish, facing into the Ohel, on the side where people enter. In a farewell that was fit for a queen, the funeral procession was 15,000 strong, and it was led by an official police motorcade. And that was when the Rebbetzin passed away in 1988. The Rebbe often spoke about the idea of living up to the Rebbetzin's legacy, and the way that he phrased it always, v'hacha yiten el libo, people should take to heart, let the living take to heart, people need to take. It was kind of playing on her name, Chaya, Chaya, v'hachai, people should take to heart what the Rebbetzin stood for and emulate, live up to her example. Be back with you to sum up right after this.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
So perhaps there needs to be a very, very important thought that should be crossing the minds of all women, not only to think about how the power and the prowess of the Jewish woman is paramount in Judaism, but perhaps to focus, as women should, on the day of the 22nd of Shvat, on the particular mitzvot, the particular mitzvahs that pertain to women, the ones that are singled out especially for women. Of course, we have a whole lot of mitzvahs that we can all do and that we all do, but which are the ones that are specifically earmarked as being the ones where women need to play the lead role, take the lead, be in charge? They are the idea, we mentioned it before, the chinuch of children, the education of the kids. This is a role in which women need to really take the lead. Their involvement and their ability to get through to the children is far more personal and far more warm and loving for children than men possibly could be. And then we have the idea of Hadlakat Neirot, the lighting of candles. The lighting of candles for Shabbos and Yom Tov is the privilege of the women in the house, and they need to make sure, and we need to make sure, that we light candles on time and correctly, and every Friday night, not just some, and every Yom Tov, not just some, but that we make sure that this is done, and the role that it plays in the home of bringing light and warmth and the glow of Kedusha, of holiness in the home, is in the hands of the women. And then, of course, the idea of Taharat HaMishpacha, of family sanctity, of the rules of going to the mikveh and making sure that our progeny, that our future, is always started with the idea of Kedusha, of holiness, of mikveh, of cleanliness, of spiritual cleanliness, of spiritual connection, that this is in the hands of the women. So in honor of the Rebbetzin, 22nd of Shvat, from tonight and tomorrow, perhaps to make a renewed commitment to these mitzvahs and to all the others, and live a life of holiness, of modesty, of and the opposite of self-centeredness, in every possible way. This is the call of the Rebbetzin's life and the Rebbetzin's Yahrzeit. I look forward to being back with you same time, same place again, please God, next week. And in the meantime, wish you a great rest of the week, a great Shabbos up ahead, and take good care of yourselves. during this coming week. Be well.